Well, let's go back to chapter 19 and finish up chapter 19. And I think I mentioned last week where David is kind of tying up loose ends. Different people that he's wanting to talk to and kind of get things wrapped up with. And so he considers them kind of loose ends. And we talked last week about Mephibosheth and getting things kind of taken care of with him. And I don't remember, did we get to Barzillai or not, or Barzillai? Did we get that far, or that's where we were starting? Okay. So 2 Samuel 19, verse 31, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, came down from Rogelim and went across the Jordan with the king to escort him across the Jordan. And Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old, and he had provided the king with supplies while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very rich man. And the king said to Barzillai, "Come across with me, and I'll provide for you while you're with me in Jerusalem." But Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am today 80 years old. Can I discern between the good and bad? Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any longer the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be a further burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way across the Jordan with the king, and why should the king repay me with such a reward? Please let your servant turn back again, that I may die in my own city, near the grave of my father and mother. But here's your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what seems good to you." And the king answered, "Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what seems good to you. Now whatever you request of me, I will do for you." Then all the people went over the Jordan. And when the king had crossed over, the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own place. He was one of them, back a few chapters, that had helped David a lot, had given him and his people supplies. I think that was back in chapter 17. And David wants him to come back with him to Jerusalem so he could, you might say, repay him for the good that he had done. But he says, you know, I'm kind of past the age in some respects of enjoying a lot of these things. So it would be better for me just to go back to my people and live out however long I have to live, and then be buried with my mom, my mother and father. So that's what he says would be best for him. He's not really wanting any reward for himself at all, which shows a great attitude that this man had, just a tremendous attitude. And so he says, "What I want you to do is please take my servant and," as he says, "do whatever seems good to you." And of course, that's what's going to happen. We learn more about it in 1 Kings, but David does just that. David does take him and treat him well. I think it's a super attitude this guy has about being generous to someone else. You know, he doesn't want any of these things. He said it's kind of be a waste.
People like that in the time period that we're reading are few and far between.
Yeah, that's true. He sets a great example. Sets a great example of not being selfish, but being concerned for other people. And it's a great example, even for us today. But David does take care of him, the servant, and we learn more about that in 1 Kings. And then he's tied up three loose ends now with three different people. And now the end of the chapter, it kind of ends on a negative note. Now the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him, and all the people of Judah escorted the king, and also half the people of Israel. Just then all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, "Why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king, his household, and all David's men with him across the Jordan?" So all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, "Because the king is a close relative of ours. Why then are you angry over this matter? Have you ever eaten in the king's expense? Or have we ever eaten at the king's expense? Or has he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 shares in the king. Therefore we also have more rights to David than you. Why then do you despise us? Were we not the first to advise bringing back our king? Yet the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. How would we classify this conflict? How would you classify this conflict? What's it really about?
It doesn't seem like the men of Israel have a leg to stand on.
Okay. And what are they using for their so-called leg?
We've got 10 tribes.
Yeah, they said, we've got 10 tribes. You guys just have 2. So we should have the bigger share, basically. It's really just about, they're just jealous, aren't they? Aren't these people just jealous? Instead of, remember, they're all related. It's all family. So instead of acting like a family, they're acting like little jealous kids almost is what they're doing. They're acting like little jealous kids. Hey, we want to do this. No, we should get to do it or whatever. You know, that's the way they're acting. They're acting very immature. Both sides, if you want to call it that, are acting immature. And this conflict between the north and the south continues. It never really gets better. It continues, and then, of course, it finally erupts later on. But this is kind of near the beginning of this conflict that never gets resolved between the 10 northern tribes and the 2 southern tribes.
The Israelites forget really quick that they've been trying to get David all along.
They, you know, when you kind of figure out who, okay, so David ends up being the winner. Well, suddenly everybody says, well, we've always been on David's side. You know, and like everything else you learn in the Old Testament, people are just exactly the same. You know, people haven't changed at all. They haven't, and they won't change. They're going to be the exact same. The circumstances may be different. The nature and the attitudes and so forth are the same because that's what these people are doing. And like I said, unfortunately, this conflict, this division, if you want to call it that, continues on. And it continues on right into the next chapter. And it just basically keeps on going because in the very next chapter, he starts out, and there happened to be there a rebel. Well, you know when a chapter starts like that, you've got quite a chapter coming ahead. There happened to be a rebel. Something is going to happen. And that's, of course, exactly what's going to happen because whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, we have no share in David, nor do we have inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel. So no wonder he's called a rebel. He's trying to do what with this announcement with the trumpet?
Stir up trouble.
Okay. And get people, you know, so stirred up that they're ready to do something, right? They're ready to take some type of action. Oh, yes, I remember reading that in some of the notes this week. Man of Belial, yeah, that's right. Which is even worse than calling him a rebel. So you just see what kind of person he is. He's wanting to make trouble. He's wanting to make trouble. And that's what he's going after. And so he's a Benjamite from that tribe. And he says, we don't have any share in David. We don't have any inheritance. So what's he wanting the men to do? So every man of Israel deserted David and followed Sheba, the son of Bichri. But the men of Judah, from the Jordan as far as Jerusalem, remain loyal to their king. What is astonishing about those two verses, especially verse 2? I mean, it's just a complete reversal. just a total 1 minute. Yay, we're following David. We should be escorting David. David's our king. And then, boom, one rebel says, every man to their tents. Okay, here we go.
Pretty much I'm taking my toys and going home.
So people's...
Very weak-minded David. Like sheep, they just let whoever...
Yeah, exactly. That's a good analogy. Like sheep, just boom, and just going wherever. Kind of like, you know, that's kind of what happened with Jesus in the first century. You know, he was led into the city of Jerusalem. People were crying, you know, Hosanna, Hosanna, and, you know, this is the king, the son of David, and all of this. And then just a short time after that, they were saying, crucify him. So people's... opinion or whatever you want to call it can change in the drop of a hat. And that's what these people were doing here. Of course, we could say ultimately that Satan was behind him, because he was. That's what Satan does. He deceives people and tries to get people to go against God's anointed, because David is God's anointed. He is the king. God anointed him as king. And Satan is trying to use him to draw people away. And Satan has always done that. So, talked about the people. But the men of Judah from the Jordan south, as far as Jerusalem, remain loyal to their king. Well, in verse 3, now David came to his house at Jerusalem, and the king took the 10 women, his concubines, whom he had left to keep the house, and put them in seclusion and supported them, but did not go into them. So they were shut up to the day of their death, living in widowhood. And these, of course, are the women that Absalom had used, basically, back in some of the prior chapters. So David, in that respect, they weren't clean. So he basically, he really wouldn't call them prisoners, but they were almost like prisoners in a sense, because it says they were locked up or shut up to the day of their death, living in widowhood. So they were, in some respects, almost like prisoners. And, of course, none of it was their fault, in the sense of Absalom was the one that was, one that had caused most of the problems. But David does take care of them. But they're basically just kind of left by themselves the rest of their lives, however long that was. Now we go to Amasa, whom we've already talked about once or twice. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time which David had appointed him. We would like to know why, but it doesn't say why. But whatever reason, The result was pretty important. But whatever reason, it says, he went to assemble. Well, and the king said to Amasa, assemble the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself. So Amasa went to assemble the men of Judah, but he delayed longer than the set time, than the 3 days, which David had appointed him. And David said to Abishai, now Sheba the son of Bichri will do us more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him, lest he find for himself fortified cities and escape us. Now, David has just gone from one problem into another. And now he's got an entirely different problem. The Sheba is trying to cause a revolt, a rebellion, trying to get followers, and apparently is doing a good job. So the king wants Amasa to take men, get them assembled, find them, get them together, and then be present here with them. And it says it took longer than the 3 days, so David finds Abishai instead. It says, you take the Lord's servant, you pursue him, lest he find for himself fortified cities. So what was the great hurry? Why is David in a hurry? I think that's an important part of this. Why is he in such a hurry? What's he afraid Sheba's going to do?
Organize an uprising.
Organize, yeah. The more time you give Sheba, the higher the probability he's going to be able to get a lot of people, get organized, get an army. So David wants him got quickly. Get him as fast as possible. And he was afraid, like he says, lest he find for himself fortified cities and escape us. So Joab's men with the Cherethites, the Pelethites, and all the mighty men went out after him, and they went out of Jerusalem to pursue Sheba the son of Bichri. When they were at the large stone, which is in Gibeon, Amasa came before them. Now Joab was dressed in battle armor. On it was a belt with a sword fastened in its sheath at his hips, and he was going. And as he was going forward, it fell out. And Joab said to Amasa, "Are you in health, my brother?" And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. But Amasa did not notice the sword that was in Joab's hand, and he struck him with it in the stomach, and his entrails poured out on the ground, and he did not strike him again. Thus he died. Then Joab and Abishai's brother pursued Sheba the son of Bichri. Probably shouldn't be surprised, because this is Joab. That's just the way he operates. He has that attitude or mentality or whatever about killing people. And he's done that before. In this case, it is Amasa. So why does he go after Amasa, of all people? Yeah. Wants him out of the way, I guess would be the way to express it. Just wants him out of the way. And if it means, you know, hiding his sword and going up to him, grabbing a person's beard. Of course, all men basically had beards back then. Grabbing a beard was a sign of a greeting, of welcome. And you grabbed your beard, or the person's beard, in this case, says ready to kiss him. And he uses that, of course, as an opportunity to kill him instead. And, of course, it says, he died, so Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba. And meanwhile, one of Joab's men stood near Amasa and said, "Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, follow Joab." But Amasa wallowed in his blood in the middle of the highway, and when the man saw that all the people stood still, he moved Amasa from the highway to the field and threw a garment over him when he saw that everyone who came upon him halted. When he was removed from the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue Sheba the son of Bichri. It is quite an ugly tale. Amasa was just kind of a messy, bloody distraction. So let's move him out of the way, cover him up, and go. And that was the end of Amasa. And people, or some of those men, might have thought that was covering up murder, but it didn't cover up anything. Just because they put a blanket or sheet over him didn't cover up anything whatsoever. So that's probably as far as we can go. It's already 20 till. But now I will not be here next Wednesday night. So the following Wednesday night, I'll talk to David or some of the men, see what they want to do about Wednesday night. But we'll probably just start in verse 14 then in a couple weeks. Thank you very much for your comments tonight.